Brian Samples has been missing for over a month, and his family just wants answers. WGXA's Jayla Whitfield sat down with the family. Jayla, they came to East Dublin trying to get some of those answers.
Aaron, they've been searching for answers since they filed a missing persons report in early July, and they still don't have them. Now the authorities are asking you all at home for help.
Oh my gosh, Brian, if you can see me, if you can hear me, you know me, I'm always there for you. I don't care where you are. I don't care how deep, how dark, how cold, how hot. You call me, I'll come.
43-year-old Brian Samples' family is doing everything they can to find him.
You can't. You know, the worry and the wonder and just the concern and thinking he needs help and we're not able to help him.
The concern continues to linger a month later. Brian was last seen in East Dublin at the Red Carpet Inn with friends.
A young man with a love for people and a love for music and carpentry.
East Dublin and Dodge County Police are looking for answers, but they're asking for your help.
A son, a daddy, a grandfather, a brother who's loved and missed.
Samples has three children that are wondering when their father will be home.
The emotional roller coaster is so almost unbearable.
The family says without the prayers, they wouldn't be able to make it.
We'll never give up looking for you, Brian. We'll never give up.
Now, Brian Samples is 43 years old. He's about 6'2", and he weighs roughly 255 pounds. If you've seen him or if you have any information, please contact the police department. But for now, in the control room, Jayla Whitfield.
Hello, this is Mark. I write a weekly newspaper column about true crime and unsolved homicides for the Claremont Sun in Ohio. Welcome to the Catch My Killer podcast, and thank you for listening. Before I discuss this week's podcast episode, I would like to ask for your help. I'm looking for listeners to help support the podcast by buying me a cup of coffee. If you're like me, you cannot live without your coffee. To help support the podcast, I'm asking you to subscribe to my monthly Crime Coffee Club, which is only $5 per month. It goes a long way in helping support the podcast. If you subscribe to my monthly coffee fund, I will share exclusive content with you and eventually commercial-free episodes and extra ones. And if you enjoy reading about true crime stories, I will also share some really interesting stories with you. If you would like to support the podcast, please visit catchmykiller.com. You can either click on the donate link or on the buy me a coffee link. And that's enough talk about coffee. Now it's time to talk about this week's unusual death. This week's story comes from East Dublin, Georgia, and involves the story of a man named Brian Samples, who vanished from his hotel room and was later found deceased. For now, there aren't any details about how Brian died or who may be involved in his death. According to his family, law enforcement hasn't officially ruled Brian's death a homicide, but his family is 100% positive that someone murdered him. According to East Dublin Police Chief Bill Luke, he has said that his department is treating Brian's death as questionable. For this story, I contacted Chief Luke with questions about the case. He didn't reply to my request for an interview. Brian's last contact with his family was by text on July 6, 2019. Lori Duncan, who is Brian's sister, said that he texted that he had met up with some bad people. He was last seen alive on July the 6th, 2019 at the Red Carpet Inn in East Dublin, where he had been staying. His family reported him missing on July 26, 2019. Brian was a skilled carpenter and a faithful Christian man. Although he had battled drug addictions, his sister Lori told me that Brian was a good man who loved his family and God. Brian's family is convinced that he was killed by someone he knew. They don't believe that this was random. It's been nearly 2 years since Brian's death. For this story, I spoke to Brian's sister, Lori Duncan. She told me about Brian's battles with his addiction, his love for his family, and that he always tried to inspire others and encourage them to defeat their own personal demons. The family is heartbroken over the loss of Brian. Perhaps after listening to Brian's story, you will feel compelled to report any information about his death to law enforcement. Now on with this week's story about Brian Samples, as told by his sister, Lori Duncan.
Brian is my younger brother. He was born 3 years after me on July 17th, 1976. We are a blended family. There's 9 of us total. My dad had 5 children, and then he and my mom had 4. And we were all raised together, so we've never really looked at each other as anything but siblings. So Brian was the 3rd child in that order of 4, the last set. And he was always real handsome, always good with the ladies. He had 3 children, Brianna, Robbie, and Haley, 2 girls and a boy. And he has 1 grandson who he absolutely thought hung the moon. I mean, every single day he would send me pictures of Eli and videos, and he would say, "He's so handsome, isn't he, Lori? And he looks like me, doesn't he, Lori?" And he just was over the moon over his grandson. Eli was born August 18th, 2018, and Brian went missing July 6th, 2019. He was always a champion for the underdog. Always, like if somebody was weaker than him, or if somebody had less than him, or in throughout his life struggled with addiction. So if he was in a situation where he met somebody and they had children, he would protect those kids. And sometimes he would stay in a relationship just because of those children. He was a master carpenter. He could build anything. You could show him something. And like he came to my house one weekend and he was going to build me a deck. The week before I had seen this beautiful deck at a house down the street and I'd never seen one like it before. And I said, "Hey, do you think you could do me a deck like that?" And he said, "Well, take me over there and let me see it." So we rode by just from the street and he said, "Yeah, I think I can do that." And we came home and he built it. Now, fast forward a few days ago, I was talking to my nephew, Robbie, and telling him about him doing that because Robbie actually helped him build that deck at my house. And he said, "Yeah," he said, "that's a really hard design to do." And I didn't know that because he just made it look so easy and he did it without any issues and completed it during the weekend like he was going to my normal deck. He would send me pictures of work that he had done remodeling, or he was really proud of the work he had done in Dublin, Georgia. They had redone some buildings and made them into apartments and beautiful woodwork throughout. And he would send me photographs of that and talk about how gorgeous it was, and what a great job the owner was doing on the property. And he was a master carpenter. He built houses his whole life with my dad and brother, and he really knew how to build anything. He was a person who, and this is something that people don't really seem to understand because of some things that happened in his life, but he really loved God. He knew the Bible frontwards and back. There wasn't a scripture that he couldn't give you. He knew it so well. And he had gotten in trouble when he was very young. And throughout that process, he had spent some time in and out of jail. And most of it was for probation violation. He would just get tired of showing up and they would put him back in jail. And he would do really good, come home, and then he would just get tired of reporting it. He hated the fact that he had to, you know, tell somebody where he lived and what he was doing and that kind of thing. Since he's been gone. We've had people from guards that were there at the prison email us and tell us what a good guy he was. And I had one particular guard email me that I thought was so special. And he said, you know, your brother was a good man who made some bad choices. He said he didn't realize there were people that weren't like him that were truly evil and that weren't good guys who made bad choices. And he said, I really believe that Brian ran into some true evil the day that they took him from us. So even people who knew him as a prisoner liked him and saw something different in him. Brian had left. He had defended a woman and went back to jail, and he had left jail and was in a rehab facility in Dublin or Lawrence County, and he was doing really, really well there. The last year of his life since Eli was born, he had really had some major changes, and he had gotten a weekend pass and came to see me and my family on June 9th, 2019. And during that visit, we had probably one of the best visits ever. Brian was an early riser. He got up early because he worked construction most of his life. He would get things done before it got so hot that they couldn't work. And of course, my husband's worked nights our entire marriage. And so we were kind of on a little bit of a different schedule. The last morning that he was here, he got up and left early, and he wrote me a note. And he mentioned all my children. He mentioned my husband and just told us what a wonderful visit that he had and how much he loved us all. And then he hit the road, and I called him. And I said, you're already gone. And he said, yeah. He said, I wanted to get on back home. He said, I just really had a great weekend, and I wanted y'all to know how much I love y'all and appreciate y'all letting me come. Then he went on back home. Well, I talked to him several times in the month of June. We know now that what he thought that he was living in the rehab facility with a preacher. His roommate was a preacher. He had moved from the actual housing to like their on-site where you could live individually. He had a roommate that he thought was a preacher. Well, the so-called preacher was a drug dealer, and he had asked Brian to take him for the weekend to see his family. So he went and saw his family. And during that trip, Brian used. And once that happened, for my brother, when he messed up, nobody was more disappointed. And I think this is true probably for most people who are alcoholics or addicts or whatever you struggle with. When he messed up, nobody was more disappointed in himself than him. Nobody hated what he had done more than he did. He said to me one time, he said, Lori, I don't understand why I do the thing that I hate and I can't do the thing that I want most to do. And I said, well, hey, Brian, you know, Paul wrote about that in the Bible. When you figure that out, then you got us all beat, because that was exactly Paul's struggle. So it really bothered him when something like that happens. And he called me afterwards and he said, I messed up, sis, but I'm good. I'm back at the rehab and I'm going to get myself straightened back up. Now, this was June 30th. On July 3rd, I sent him a message and to check on him. And he wouldn't call me back, which was unusual for Brian. Like, we heard from him every single day. One of the things that my mother misses the most is he would call her 3 to 5 times a day. He would video call her. Mama, look what I'm working on. You know, just to talk to her. He had a very special and close relationship with my mama, because everything that she had been through with him, she still loved him and he still knew it. And she had remarried 13 years after my father passed. And he had a really good relationship with my stepfather. And so he loved them. He called them daily. The same thing, he would call my sister, Elaine, almost daily to talk about Eli and send her pictures. And the same thing with me. I mean, it was not unusual for him to call me three times a day. And in between, we were texting, sharing pictures of our grandbaby and talking about life and, you know, what he was building. He'd send me the pictures of the buildings and things like that. His daughter, Brianna, same way. She was constantly sending him pictures of the baby and video. And so we heard from him as a family daily. Around July 3rd, we could tell that he was not doing well because he sent a message that said, basically, I love you, but I'm no good for y'all. We all just started encouraging him like we do. And we all just sent him messages saying, hey, you know what? It's okay. Relapse is part of recovery. You got this. And on July 4th, we didn't hear from him. And on July 5th, we didn't hear from him. And around the 6th and the 7th, my mom came here July 4th. And I think it was about the 7th or 8th we were talking. And I said, you know, Mom, I got a message from Lee, which was Brian's girlfriend at the time. And I said, she asked me, had I heard from Brian? And I didn't respond to her because at different times in their relationship, she was an enabler. I believe that he loved her, but I also believe that they weren't good for each other. And I believe that she loved him. But I knew that they kind of, when they would get together, sometimes things were not as smooth as they should be. And they didn't make each other better. And that was just my opinion. And so when Mama said she had not heard from him, my mom was really worried immediately. She said, Lori, I'm worried. And I said, Mama, he's probably with Lee. They just want to know what we know. Because I really thought it's only been a day or two. And Brian always called me when he would get sick of himself or when he would realize, okay, I've got to make a change, he would call me. So when I didn't hear from him for a day, I wasn't worried, but my mom immediately was. And that Sunday night, we got another message from Lee, and Mama said, Lori, I think you should call her back and see what's going on. I'm really worried. And so I tried to call her and she didn't answer. So Mama called her and she responded to Mama and she told Mama she was really worried about Brian. And this was probably around by the time we reached her, the 13th, maybe. Now, I did find out later that Lee tried to reach out to me sooner, but she had done it through Facebook Messenger and I didn't have my Facebook logged in. So I didn't know that, you know, she had tried to reach out to me as early as she did, because she had said to me several times, I tried to reach you immediately. And I was like, well, I don't have anything on my phone, but I did find out that is true. She did try to reach me immediately. So come to find out, Brian had sent Lee a cryptic message saying that he thought he was about to be robbed and that if anything happened to him, to check out some people. To be honest with you, I believe if it were not for that message, that we still would be looking for my brother. Because when adults go missing, people just don't take it as seriously as if it were a child. An adult male who goes missing a lot of time is just swept under the rug. Well, he doesn't want to be found. And that's just not true always. So when we got that message, then we all started to get even more concerned. And Brian had sent that message to three different people, not just one. So we all started at that point. We kind of kicked it in high gear. My mom, my sister, and I started making phone calls covertly. We didn't want to alarm everybody unnecessarily, but we started looking in places where we would typically find Brian. We reached out to all of his children. Have you heard from your daddy? It was very unusual that none of them had heard from him. And when I talked to my nephew, Robbie, he said, you know, Lori, he said, I'm worried about daddy. He said, every time I go somewhere, somebody says, hey, Robbie, I saw your daddy the other day, or I just saw your dad. And he said, nobody has seen daddy in over a week. And that kind of let me know that even Robbie's little spotter senses, and Robbie's, you know, I think of him as a child still, but Robbie's a grown man. I think he just turned 22. So, but even he was aware something wasn't right. And we had not really shared that with anybody because we were still trying to make sure before we alarmed everybody. We called all of our family. We reached out to people who were good friends with Brian. Finally, we decided it was time to file a missing persons report when we sort of had a date in mind because Brian's birthday, my mother's birthday, his daughter's birthday, and his grandson's birthday were all within a month. July 17th, 24th, 27th, and then August 18th. So we knew that Brian would not miss any of those dates. And the first one was, of course, his birthday. And by then, we had already reached out to try to find out how to file a missing persons report. We got some different answers. One person said, you have to come here and file in person. Another person told me only his mother can file. So I had my mom call that county and she filed the report. Then I had a really good friend who was a lifelong friend who knew my brother and I had gone to school with him and he was the chief of police in a county in Georgia. I messaged him and I said, you know, I don't know what to do. What should I do? And he said, Lori, go to Dublin, sit down in front of that police, make him know who your brother was. He said, don't do this remotely. He needs to see your face. He needs to know Brian was loved. He needs to know he has a family and that y'all are really concerned. And I think that was probably one of the best pieces of advice that I got during this process because we didn't know. We'd never dealt with a situation like this. And I think most people who go through it haven't. My mom was able to get phone numbers that Brian, you know, really good people that Brian was close to in that area. And Brian had connected me with one of his good friends there. And I immediately started reaching out to her and she started reaching out to the community. In the meantime, I called a good friend of Brian's who was a pastor there. And we were able to trace Brian's last step from July 3rd, all the way to the last time he was heard from on July 6th. And that was through one person who said, Lori, you know, last time I seen him, he was with so-and-so. And then I called so-and-so, and so-and-so said, the last time I seen him, he was with so-and-so. Well, in the meantime, we put up a Facebook page, we printed a flyer, and my aunt and Brian's girlfriend went to East Dublin, where he was last seen, and started hanging posters. And the community there was wonderful, letting us put up posters in storefronts. You know, anywhere we went in that I'm aware, no one refused Brian's poster. And in the interim, I was on the phone trying to figure out where he was last seen. And so I would call my aunt and I would say, can you go to this place and see if they've seen Brian? And so while they were hanging posters, they would stop what they were doing and they would go over to that place. And then I would say, okay, he was seen here, and she would go there. And that's how we did it. As a family, we knew Brian's last movement. And I'm not saying that people should investigate themselves or whatever, but I'm saying that if the police are not doing anything, then you have a right to do it. There's no reason you can't call and ask questions.
It sounds like your entire family knew something was wrong immediately. Your brother speaks to his mother daily and also keeps in touch with other family members regularly. And then out of nowhere, he just ceases contact without any reason. Families typically know when something is wrong. If one of my brothers just vanished, I would know that something was wrong because it doesn't fit their behavior patterns. They always keep in touch with our family. I imagine you all knew immediately that Brian was in trouble after you didn't hear from him after July the 6th, 2019.
Right. In our family, I have a grandchild that I watch every day, and my sister had just started a new job, and she has a very important position there. She had the resources and the money, but she did not have the ability to take time off yet. And my aunt just happened to be in a position where she said, hey, I'll go. You guys will get me a hotel room and you get me the flyers. I'll go. And so while she was on the ground hanging posters, it was definitely a family effort, but the police were not in a hurry. They really didn't think there was anything to worry about because when Brian would get in trouble, he would leave. That was his MO. But he always stayed in contact with us. He, even if he wanted to kind of fly under the radar or whatever, he still would talk to us. And that's what we were trying to make people see. Listen, this is unusual behavior. This is not just some guy who's decided he's going to go on a bender and he'll show up in a few days. Even when he was on a bender, he would call us. So at that point, we started working to find Brian, and we could not find him. But what we did find was that he had left all of his belongings in a hotel room in the Red Carpet Inn in East Dublin. Now, what I find unusual about this and what question I have is, if a man leaves everything he owns, including his car, in your parking lot, and I don't know if this happened or not, but why wouldn't you call the police? Why would you just assume that somebody left all their stuff and just walked away? Who does that? So I know the police were called to come and impound the car, but I know that Brian's things were taken out of this room before police was called to check anything out. To me, there was a missed opportunity. If somebody leaves everything that they own in this, I mean, he had guitars, Brian was a musician, he wrote songs, sang beautifully. A lot of the videos that we have on YouTube of him is him singing and playing, and him singing and playing with his daughter. He was also hilarious. It was not unusual for him to call me up and pretend to be somebody else with an accent, and it literally would take me a minute, and I would be like, oh, it's Brian, because he was so good at that. So when we found out that all his things were left in this hotel room, then we became really scared. I did. My mom and my sister knew very early on that Brian was no longer with us. I held on literally until we found his body. I just kept praying that he would be okay. I did not want to believe that he was gone. Brian and I were very close, as he was with a lot of our family, and I couldn't accept it. I really could not accept that he was really gone. We had people contacting the Facebook page, and we ran down every single lead. We had a sweet woman send us a picture of a guy at a bus stop, and she was convinced it was my brother, and I was praying that it was him, but it wasn't. But we literally ran down every single lead. There wasn't a single lead that we did not share with police and that we did not find out, hey, what happened with this?
Can you tell me why he was staying at the hotel?
When he left the rehab facility, when he said, I can't do this, basically, he went to the hotel where, in this part of East Dublin, there's the hotel that people apparently live at. It's like an extended stay type of hotel. And somebody that he thought was a friend was living at that place, the American Inn. So Brian had sent a message to a friend saying that he had gotten involved with some really bad people and he was being paranoid. And so he had rented a room. He had some money, not a ton, but they thought it was a lot more than it was. I think he was afraid he was going to get robbed. And so he rented the room at one hotel, and then he rented the room across the street as well. So he had two hotel rooms. We don't know if Brian was actually staying at those hotel rooms or if somebody was trying to make it look like Brian was staying at those hotel rooms. At that point, there were two rooms in his name. We do know for certain he was in the room at the Red Carpet Inn because one of the ladies who cleans the room told me that he asked her for towels the day, which may have been one of the last times somebody saw him that we were able to run down.
So the hotel is the last place anyone saw him alive.
Right. We weren't able to find anybody who admitted talking to Brian after that and him being at that hotel. But I know that Brian was not the last person to drive his car. And there's some things surrounding that I really can't talk about because it is an ongoing investigation. But we have reason to believe that he was not the last person driving his car. I stood at that hotel at least on 5 different occasions in the back. I walked down the road behind that hotel. I walked as far as I could because there was like a tree line that ran along some railroad track. I walked as far as I could down that road screaming his name. We tried to get the police to help us set up a search early on, but they wouldn't. And I would say, why can't we search now? And they would say, well, we have a lead that Brian met somebody and he might have went to this state or that state. But what they didn't know is through our family, we had connections in Florida, North Carolina. Brian's pictures and posters were up in South Georgia. My sister and I even went to Waycross because we had a lead that might have been the last place he was seen. And we put out 1,000 posters in Waycross, Georgia. We had people in Florida put out posters for us. We have people in North Carolina who have Brian's face hanging in gyms and grocery stores. And I mean, and of course, South Carolina, where I live, I had a network of people looking for Brian. We were looking for Brian already in all those places and could still not find him past East Dublin. Finally, we set up a search. We had about 150 people coming to help us. And then a hurricane came through. And the chief of police called me late Friday night and said, Lori, I need to ask you to call this search off. They have rerouted all of our interstate going the opposite direction to get people out of Savannah. And so we did because they asked us to and because we felt like that was a responsible thing to do. But as soon as that was happened, the next week I said, okay, we want to come and search on this date. And they wouldn't give me a new date. So finally, our lead investigator, he really has been wonderful. He's talked to the family, you know, which they don't have to do. He has taken our phone calls. And believe me when I say, some days he's talked to me 4 times a day. We have not stopped trying to find out who's responsible for murdering my brother. I do believe 100% my brother was murdered. So I finally said to them, we're coming on September 28th. It's set up. We're coming. And we had a wonderful person in the community, Michelle Foskey, who said, what can I do? And another company called DARPRO. And we had other people in Dublin reach out and say, you know, I have a drone. I'll use my drones, which he did the day before we searched. He flew over the area. In fact, the police had already reached out to him and was having him use his drones to try and find Brian because they had tips come in. You know, Brian was here, Brian was there, but he never was where the tip came in at. So that September 28th, our family and lots of friends and lots of Brian's friends, they brought a van load of guys up from the rehab facility where Brian was. And they all came in and they all helped. And we had my sister's church had donated peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and ice water and so that we could give the volunteers hydration. The police came out, gave them orange vests, told them what they needed to do, and they gave us an area to search. Well, we started searching that area that morning, and they wanted us kind of to be done by 2:00. But at 2:00, we had still not found anything. ¶¶ We had talked to a lot of people. We had just a strange kind of day. We had guys on four-wheelers helping us. And about 2:15 or so, one of the guys from DARPRO had called my cell phone and he said, "Miss Lori, we found something. Can you come over here?" And I said, sure. I was about to take my brother to the bathroom, my younger brother, Blake. So I rode over in the field where they were at. It was Brian Schwartz, and they were, you could tell they had been buried in the dirt, not purposely, like just the dirt and the mud. 2 weeks after Brian went missing, apparently it rained in Dublin. You can literally see the hotel from where these shorts were. And so when he pulled the shorts up out of the ground, they were shorts that Brian wore at my house, but they were black athletic shorts. So everybody has black athletic shorts. All the men in my family do. So I thought they could be Brian's shorts, but I wasn't devastated because I didn't know. So they had called over the police so that they could take the evidence and bag it up. And when the officer got there, he put on his gloves and you could tell the shorts were heavy. And inside the shorts was my brother's wallet. So I actually stood in the field on September 28th, about 2:25 in the afternoon, and watched them pull my brother's wallet from his shorts. I literally almost passed out when they opened the wallet and read his name. I was there, and the lady and the man from DARPRO literally held me while I cried, and my sister was already on her way, and when she got there, she knew. And my brother knew how I reacted, so he jumped out of the car and came over. And I think that's when I started to accept the fact that Brian is gone. You know, a million things go through your mind, things you shouldn't have to think of, things that when we were searching for Brian, I tried to hold at bay. I remember one night laying awake in a hotel in Waycross, Georgia, and it was storming. And I remember thinking, Brian, are you safe? Are you warm? Are you undercover somewhere? Are you out in the middle of the storm? So for parents of young children who have to go through this, I mean, I can't even imagine. My brother was a grown man, and we were experiencing this kind of grief and hurt, and I just can't even imagine what those families go through. And you watch a show on television, and you think, oh, that's awful. But when you live it, it gives you a whole new perspective for other people who go through this. And what I found out through this process is literally no matter what people say in their mind, you have this scale of who you think is worthy and who you think isn't. Just like for me, when I would say, you know, I would like to put up this poster, my brother's been missing since July 6th. I literally had people say to me, is he involved in drugs? Like, why does that matter? What makes a person more worthy of life? We have an opioid epidemic going on in this country, and half the people who are addicted got started because their doctor overprescribed something. Yet you feel justified in judging those people and the worthiness of their life. Brian was loved. He had a family who depended on him, who loved him, who he contributed to. I've struggled with my weight my whole life. My brother was the first person to tell me I was beautiful, no matter what. He was the first person to encourage me if I lost 5 pounds. He was a wonderful man who did make some bad choices. What we lost was so much more than somebody who called us for money or when they needed something. I mean, my mother to this day, she said, that's what I miss most. It's him video calling me. I don't know how to feel my day because nobody else calls me like the brother did. Nobody else videos me that many times a day. So standing there in that field and realizing that Brian wasn't coming home and thinking, why are his shorts here, but there's no body? What did they do to him? Why is his shorts not on his body? That's when we really, as a family, we made the decision to tell everybody at that moment because we really thought the news is not going to be good. So we told the family. At that point, some of the volunteers had already had to go home. Some people had other obligations. The family was still there because some of us had driven 4.5 hours to be there, and they weren't leaving until they absolutely had to. We told everybody, and we all decided to continue to search. The police came over and asked us to leave and told us they had had a lead that he was not in the field. And I don't know if that was truth or lie, or if they were just worried about us contaminating what could be a crime scene, but we honored their wishes and we left. 2 days later, they found Brian's body on October 3rd. Maybe it was October 2nd. It was that Wednesday. And the funny thing is because we had made friends with people in the community, I had already gotten 3 phone calls before the police ever called us. And people are really kind. They don't want to tell you things that they know you don't want to hear. But they're also understanding of the fact that if this was my family, I would want to know. So a sweet lady named Miss Sue had called me. Then shortly after that, the detective working on Brian's case had tried to reach me and couldn't. So he called my sister and they told us they were pretty sure it was Brian they had found.
Who found Brian?
They had called the GBIN, is my understanding. I believe it was one of the police on a four-wheeler in that area where we had searched and found his shorts.
So he was found deceased near the hotel where he was last seen. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's what, when I said to you, I stood at that field. Had I known that is where he was, I was right there. My aunt was right there so many times. Lee was right there. My two brothers had walked that same area and probably passed right by where he was within 3 weeks of him being gone. After my aunt needed to come home, she was exhausted and worried, sick, and we tried to have different family members go down at that point to try and have somebody in the area every single week until he was found. And we did. And just recently, on the anniversary of what we feel was his death, of course, all his death certificate and everything says October, because when you have a missing person, they have to use the death date is when they were recovered. We don't believe he ever saw his last birthday, but the date of his death officially, I think, is October 2nd when they found his body. Of course, from that point, you think, okay, well, you have some peace. In October, we found him. It took months for them to identify him. We knew, the police chief knew based on what he found. He realized that it was Brian, and he prepared us for that, but he couldn't officially say that. But then when we actually found out, I think it was November 6th, and at that point, we still didn't know when they would release his body for burial. For my mom, it was kind of every step had been, okay, let's find him. Let's get him home to bury him. Okay, let's have his memorial. It's like every step. And now it's, okay, let's find who did this. For her, I can't imagine. I mean, it's her son. And so there are days when I just feel like everything we're doing is not enough. And then there are other days when I just think, what more can we do? I do know that every dream I've had, I know my brother is in heaven, and I know that he is happy and his struggle is finally over. He was a man of great faith, and I don't believe that the sum of his life was reduced to the last 3 days. And I know that Brian knew who to call on when he was in trouble. And so I have faith that he didn't suffer some of the horrific things that may have occurred during the last part of his earthly journey. And that's what I have to comfort myself with.
Do you have any details about Brian's death? Has law enforcement ever released any details to the family?
No, they are not releasing that at this point.
Was his death ruled a homicide?
Well, we got a letter from the DA that said, I'm so sorry for the senseless death of your son. So, I mean, I feel like they know it was a homicide. Whatever they said, I remember thinking he was acknowledging that Brian was killed. We know that, how do you get from your hotel to a hiding spot in the woods? Brian didn't take himself there. You don't just walk out your hotel and maybe if something happened and you were trying to get somewhere and for help, but he would have been going toward town, not buried himself in the woods.
And there are texts that stated that he had feared for his life.
Exactly. And if anything happens, contact the police. So, and he even named people. And I feel like we know who did this. We just have to prove it. That's the situation that every family's in. You can know what you know, but you still got to be able to prove it. And the biggest thing is, these people are still out there. If they killed my brother, they will kill again. So find them, prosecute them, and put them in a place where they can't do this to somebody else's loved ones.
And it's possible that if someone was involved with your brother's death, those individuals may have already killed other people.
I'm pretty confident that they have. Some things have come out just from us being in the community and talking to people. And I think that they thought Brian was just another drifter, somebody who didn't have a family, somebody who nobody would come looking for. And when we did, I think it was shocking to everybody involved. As a Christian, I believe that God dispenses justice as well. And I believe that his justice is already happening to some of these people. You know, I guess I shouldn't say this. I want to see them in jail. I hope that they, you know, live better lives, but I hope it's behind bars. I feel that they have no idea what they took from us. And I think that's true with every missing person. During the course of this, I met a woman whose brother had been missing for almost 3 years. And we began to pray that he would be found as well. She was certain he was dead, but they would not even open an investigation on him. And they did recover his bones right after they found Brian. In 2020, they did find her brother. And I believe she found out about a month after they found his bones that it was him. But at least, you know, they could bury him and have closure. So, I mean, we were, as a family, have been very fortunate that we pressed and pushed and didn't give up, because some families, they don't have the resources, or they just get tired of fighting and they feel like it's hopeless. And for us, I don't care how long it takes. There's enough of us, if something happens to me, for somebody else to take up that banner, or vice versa. We're not going away. And my sister and my mom and I have written letters. We've made phone calls. We stay in touch with people in that community. I don't take my Goodwill things to Goodwill anymore. I take it to the recovery centers in that area for people like my brother, because there are people who do recover and there are people who do live good lives, and they need opportunity to do that. And so finding out how easily people dehumanize people who have addiction or who have troubles like that has really opened my eyes. And I'm not saying it's easy loving somebody who has an issue, but we all have issues. Some of them are just more apparent than others. My brother was a good, loving, kind man. My children never knew my brother as anything more than kind and loving, and they felt the loss of him greatly. His own children, even knowing the things that he went through, are missing their dad in such a big way. Sometimes his oldest daughter calls me and she's just crying, and she's like, I want to be able to show daddy what Eli's doing, or I want to be able to show daddy this picture of him. He looks just like him, and I can't. These people don't know what they took from me. I mean, I don't know what happens in the spiritual realm when people die, not, you know, in its entirety. So who knows? So we know that Brian is still with us. Thank goodness he was a jokester, and we have all those videos and letters and things like that where a lot of people don't have those things, but we do. So those have been a blessing. All the things where, and some of them are on his Facebook page where he was cutting up and dancing and acting silly with the girls, or, but he was a good man, and he deserved a life, and the people who took it from him had no right.
This entire case is shrouded in mystery. In your opinion, what do you think happened to Brian?
I think that Brian trusted somebody close to him. Like I told you before, Brian was always a champion of the underdog. I think that he trusted somebody that he thought he needed to protect. And that person betrayed him. And I think that Brian truly encountered evil. And maybe that person only meant for him to be robbed. Or maybe that person only meant for him to get hurt and not die. Regardless, I think they set the wheels in motion for what happened that night. And I do believe that he knew, because my brother was not a trusting person, because he had been in jail. I mean, he would sit with his back to the wall if we went to a restaurant. That's what you learn when you're in jail. You can't trust people. I had a guy tell me one time, he said, Lori, jail is not to rehabilitate people. Jail is for punishment. It's not for rehabilitation. It's punishment. And it's true. Our prison system is not set up to return these people to society. And that's really unfortunate, but there's nobody that wants to take on that beast because of the amount of money and effort it would take. I do believe that there are a lot of people in our prison system who can be reformed, but there are a lot of people who should never be there in the first place. And there's a lot of people who really should never come out. They're just not capable of living in society without doing terrible things. I believe that he trusted the wrong person and that person is ultimately responsible for his death.
Based on what I've read and what you have shared with me, if Brian was murdered, then I would have to say that I think he knew his killer. I don't think this was random. It sounds like he met up with some dangerous people.
Yeah. This is somebody Brian spent time with that led him to his death.
What law enforcement agency is handling Brian's case? And what can someone do if they have a tip?
They would need to contact the East Dublin Police Department.
And you have a Facebook page for Brian, is that correct? Please tell me about the page that you set up for him.
Brian Samples Missing is his Facebook page. And I think the page has been viewed over 37,000 times. We don't have a huge number of followers, but we have a lot of people who will share the post and who try to, you know, keep him visible.
I always recommend for families and friends to put up Facebook pages for their missing or murdered loved ones. The pages can generate tips from people who don't want to contact law enforcement.
We appreciate anybody. We've had people who knew Brian send us stories about him. And that has been such a wonderful thing for my mom, hearing those stories about Brian and knowing and reaffirming what we already knew, that he was good and kind and loving to people. He truly made an impact on so many lives. You know, Brian thought that he was called to preach, and he always felt unworthy of that calling. He always thought that when he attained a certain level of, like, I got this, you know, that God would use him to minister to people. Looking back at the letters and at the phone calls and at the comments on the Facebook page, Brian already had a ministry. His ministry was in his most difficult times when he helped other people. And that was when he was in jail. He led people to Christ. We had one guy email us and say, I've been clean and sober over 10 years. And if it wasn't for your dad, this is what he told my niece, I would have never got out of jail. He said, because I was an angry young man and he led me to the Lord and showed me a different way. And I've been clean and sober 10 years. I have a wife and a little girl. Brian really did have a ministry. He just didn't recognize it. God used him in his most difficult times to help others. He thought he was still trying to attain some kind of worthiness, but the truth is God was already using him. And I think that's true for a lot of us. We don't even recognize it when God's doing his work in our life. And for Brian, that was really sad because I thought he never got to accomplish what he was meant to accomplish. But seeing all those emails and affirmations tells me that Brian accomplished exactly what he was supposed to.
Based on your brother's story, it sounds like he made a great impact on others. It reminds me of a conversation that I had with my mother from years ago. I once asked her why I was here. She told me that I wasn't here for myself, but for other people. She said that our lives always impact others. At the time, I didn't understand this, but as I've gotten older, I agree with her. You and your family members serve as great examples of this impact. Although he's deceased, your entire family misses him, and you are all out seeking answers. That tells me a lot about him as a person. So now I have one final question for you. For anyone listening to the podcast, if they know anything about what happened to your brother Brian, what would you say to that person or persons?
I think the real heroes are the people who come forward. You can know a lot of things, but the people who are the real heroes of most stories are the people who come forward and aren't afraid to tell the truth. I think a lot of people know what happened to my brother, and I think they're scared. I really believe that not only will you be helping prevent this from happening to somebody else, but I think it'll also be good for you to come forward, get it off of your conscience, off of your mind. Even if you had nothing to do with it, you just know about it. That's what we need, is for people to come forward and tell the truth. Let the police find the evidence. All you have to do is come forward and tell the truth.
And that concludes the story of Brian Samples. What happened to Brian? Do you know? Perhaps you can help his family by providing a tip. Even if you know something that may seem insignificant, I ask you to please either share the tip with the East Dublin Police Department at 478-272-6883, or you can contact the family through their Facebook page. The Facebook page is titled Brian Samples Missing. The family will share the tip with law enforcement. I will include the details in the podcast story notes. And if you are a parent, law enforcement official, friend, or relative seeking justice for an unsolved homicide case, please visit my website and complete the contact form or contact me through Facebook. Thank you for listening.